after watching this on Riverside. I am Shelby, and I am the host of Thinking Out Loud, and I haven't updated this podcast in a while. I hope you can hear me. My mic is right here. By the way, you might be getting a weird shot of my face right now because my camera is like right at the bottom of my computer monitor, so yeah. But on today's episode, we are talking about the Sylvia Likens case, and I have my trusty tablet right here with the kind of document script thingy that I have out, and I'm gonna try to be a little bit quiet because my parents are gonna be sleeping right downstairs. So yeah, so if you see me looking over here, just know I'm looking at my tablet to read the words. So anyways, let's get started. This is the Sylvia Likens case. Now, warning, today's episode will mention themes of murder, abuse, unconsensual sexual activities, and other gory details. If you are squeamish, you are advised not to listen to this episode. Proceed to listen with caution if you must. A guardian is someone who is supposed to take care of a person. In certain situations, it's an adult to a dependent person, which is some of the time children. Sorry. Okay. I'm a little bit nervous. I've never done this in front of a camera before, so if this is the first time you're seeing my face, hi. Hi there. But what happens if the very person that's expected to take care of you ends up being the one who ends your life? This is what happened to Sylvia Likens in 1965. She was tortured and murdered by her caregiver, Gertrude Banaszewski, alongside some of Banaszewski's own children and their neighborhood friends. Sylvia Marie Likens, born January 3rd, 1949, was the daughter of carnival workers Lester Cecil Likens and Elizabeth Francis. She was born between two sets of fraternal twins, Daniel and Deanna. I think that's how you say it. Diana. Yeah. Sorry, I'm also looking at myself, like, on the screen, so that's why you can see me looking up instead of at the camera. No, don't tip over. Daniel and Diana were her oldest siblings. Then there was Benny and Jenny, who were 1 year younger than her. Her sister Jenny had been stricken with polio, which caused her to have a noticeable limp, and she wore a steel brace on her left leg. Now, Jenny is also a victim in this situation. By the way, if you see my hair blowing, I have a fan. It gets really hot in this attic, what can I say? So anyways, the marriage between Sylvia's parents was unstable. They often sold candy, beer, and soda at carnival stands around Indiana. This was mainly during the summer, which also meant they moved pretty frequently, as well as experiencing financial difficulties. Sorry, I feel like I'm gonna sneeze. Okay, I think we're good. This was mainly during the summer, which also meant they moved pretty frequently. I read that. As well as experiencing... Yeah, we already read that. The Likens' sons would often travel with them to help their parents at the carnival stands. But Sylvia and Jenny were discouraged from doing the same. They both frequently stayed with relatives, mostly their grandmother. When Sylvia became a teenager, she would earn money from babysitting, running errands, and doing chores for her friends and neighbors. She would often give part of these earnings to her mother. She had been described as a friendly, confident, and lively girl. Her friends would call her Cookie. Sylvia would keep her mouth closed when smiling due to a missing front tooth she had lost when roughhousing with one of her brothers as part of a game. She also loved music, especially the Beatles. She was fairly close and protective over her younger sister, Jenny. The two would visit a local skating rink, Sylvia helping her sister skate as Jenny did so on her unaffected foot. Now we move on to the, excuse my language, bitch of the case. Gertrude Banaszewski, born September 19th, 1928, was the daughter of Hugh Marcus Van Fossen Sr.? Yeah. And Molly Myrtle in Indianapolis. Gertrude was the third of six children in a working-class family. On October 5, 1939, Gertrude would witness her 50-year-old father die of a heart attack. She then went to drop out of high school 6 years later at the age of 16. So she was 10. She was 10. She was 10. That's gotta be hard on a 10-year-old to see that kind of stuff. And then to go on, of course, to drop out of high school, and then she married her, this was, of course, to marry her 18-year-old John Stephen Banaszewski, from Youngsville. Sorry, there's hair. I swear I'm a professional. Just the hair was tickling me. But she dropped out of high school at the age of 16 to marry 18-year-old John Stephen Banaszewski from Youngsville, Pennsylvania. They had four children together. John was the type to have a volatile temper and would occasionally beat Gertrude. Despite this, they stayed together for 10 years after their first divorce. She would later go on to marry a man named Edward Guthrie. This marriage was short-lived, as it lasted for only 3 months. Then they divorced. She would go back to her first husband and have two more children with him, then divorce him again in 1963. Weeks after her third divorce, she would run into a man named Dennis Lee Wright, a 22-year-old man who also would physically abuse her. She had only one child with this man, Dennis Lee Wright Jr. Sorry, I said the husband's name was Dennis Lee Wright Jr. The father is Dennis Lee Wright Sr. So yeah, we cleared that up, hopefully. And if I'm butchering any of these names, I sincerely apologize. Trying to find where I am. Gertrude was abandoned by her third husband shortly after the birth of their son. Then she would file a paternity suit against her now ex-husband for financial support of their son, even though Wright was the least bit caring for his son. In 1965, Gertrude lived alone with her seven children, Paula, 17, Stephanie, 15, John, 12, Marie, 11, Shirley, who is 10, James, who is 8, and Dennis Lee Wright Jr., who is 1 years old. At the age of 36, standing 5 foot 6, she weighed 100 pounds, or 45 kilograms. She was described as a haggard, underweight asthmatic. She was a chain smoker and suffered from depression. This was due to three failed marriages, failed relationships, and the stress of raising seven children on her own, as well as a recent miscarriage. She would receive checks from her first husband. This was on rare occasions, though. So she would lean on the financial support of her children, as well as odd jobs she'd do for friends and neighbors, such as sewing or cleaning. This brings us to July 1965. Sylvia and Jenny were staying with their parents in Indianapolis. On July 3rd, their mother was arrested and put in jail for shoplifting. This led Lester to board his children with the Banaszewskis. This was because Sylvia and Jenny had recently become acquainted with two of Banaszewski's daughters while they were studying at Arsenal Technical High School. This was Paula and Stephanie. Gertrude had assured Lester that his children would be cared for as if they were her own until he returned. Both girls would move in with Gertrude after July 4th, whilst their father and later their mother would work East Coast at a carnival. Gertrude was to receive a boarding fee of $20, and this was a weekly fee, to care for both Sylvia and Jenny until their parents came back in November. The first few weeks were discipline and abuse-free for the Likens girls. Sylvia would regularly listen and sing to pop records with Stephanie and willingly help with household chores. Jenny and Sylvia would attend Sunday school with the Banaszewski children. The pastor even commended Sylvia for her piety, which is religious devotion. After 2 weeks, Lester's payments to Gertrude had failed to arrive on the pre-scheduled dates. They would often arrive 1 or 2 days late. While this may have been a reoccurring incident with mailing, Gertrude would take her frustrations out on Jenny and Sylvia by spanking them with various objects, such as a 1/4, and it put me on the time limit, sorry. 1/4-inch thick paddle, while making statements such as, "Well, I took care of you two little bitches for a week, for nothing," sometime in August. The girls had been reportedly beaten 15 times on the back with said paddle. This was after Paula accused both girls of eating too much food at the church supper they attended. This abuse had begun to be targeted towards Sylvia primarily. This could be because Gertrude was jealous of the girl's youth, appearance, how respectable she was, as well as her potential. A trial testimony had said that this abuse was inflicted upon Sylvia at first when they'd come home from school and on the weekends. This would initially be things like beatings and starvation, or forcing her to eat leftovers or spoiled food out of a garbage can. Likens had once been accused of stealing a candy that she bought. On other occasions, like in August, Sylvia would be subjected to humiliation. She claimed to have a boyfriend in Long Beach. This is when Gertrude asked Sylvia, this boyfriend she claimed to have met in the spring of 1965 when her family lived there. This was in California. This is when Gertrude asked Sylvia if she had ever done anything with a boy, which is an inappropriate question for her to be asking, being that Sylvia is still a minor and Gertrude is an adult. Sylvia wasn't sure of what she exactly meant, so she just simply replied, "I guess so." Sylvia had gone skating and had gone to the beach with them, with boys, and in conversation with Jenny and Stephanie, Gertrude overheard that Sylvia had said, apparently Sylvia had said she had laid under the covers with a boy. Now, I was researching from Wikipedia, not a very trustworthy source, I know, but apparently So Sylvia, Jenny, and Stephanie were talking about, I don't know what, but Sylvia said that she had laid under the covers with her boyfriend. And, I don't know if that exactly means they did the deed or whatever. I'm assuming that it was just, laying under the covers, just, like, cuddling or something. But Gertrude did not take it that way. So she asked why, Sylvia, why she would do that, and Sylvia just simply replied, I don't know. Gertrude would bring this up later, days later, by saying, you're certainly getting big in the stomach, Sylvia. It looks like you're going to have a baby. Implying that Sylvia was pregnant, Sylvia seemingly brushed this off by just saying, oh yeah, I guess I am, my stomach is kind of getting big, I'll go on a diet type thing. Yeah. Gertrude would later tell Sylvia that, and the other girls in the house, that doing something with a boy would result in something, or in becoming, them becoming pregnant. She then kicked Sylvia in the genitals. Paula, who herself was 3 months pregnant at the time, and jealous of Sylvia's figure, had participated in these attacks and shouted, you ain't fit to sit in a chair. Oh, okay, random. But, yeah. Other times, Sylvia would be subjected to being force-fed by Gertrude, Paula, and a neighborhood boy named Randy Gordon Leper. She was once forced to eat a hot dog loaded with condiments like mustard, ketchup, and spices. She would then, like, throw this up, and these three were just like, eat your vomit. Sylvia's only noted incident of retaliation was when she spread a rumor around Arsenal Technical High School that Stephanie and Paula were prostitutes. She'd only said this because she was tired of the family singling her out on these same accusations. Stephanie had been jokingly propositioned by a boy who then relayed that Sylvia had started this rumor. Stephanie did confront Sylvia when they got home, and Sylvia admitted that she did start this rumor. Stephanie then proceeded to punch Sylvia. Sylvia apologized while she was crying, which made Stephanie cry, which makes me think, as well as a detail that will be mentioned, excuse me, later on, that Stephanie was like, I don't know if she participated in any of these beatings. From what I know, it was just like mainly Gertrude and so far Paula and neighbor kids, which we will mention another one by name, because these little shits need to be called out by name. But Stephanie doesn't seem like she's participating in these. I still think if she didn't, like, tell anyone, if it's kind of bad if she didn't, but, like, it doesn't seem like she, just from certain details, it doesn't seem like she was actively, like, abusive towards Sylvia, because they were close friends, right, at first, so, yeah. Stephanie's boyfriend, unfortunately, was less understanding when he found out Sylvia was the one who started this rumor. He slapped her, hit her head against the wall, and even flipped her onto the freaking ground. And Gertrude, upon finding out about Sylvia starting this rumor, beat Sylvia with a paddle. On other occasions, Paula would beat Sylvia around her face, so much so that she would break her own wrist. She would primarily focus her hits to Sylvia's eyes and teeth. Paula would then use the cast that was on her wrist because she broke it from beating Sylvia up to further beat Sylvia. Gertrude would repeatedly accuse Sylvia of promiscuity and prostitution, even though a priest commended Sylvia for her piety. So she would accuse Sylvia of promiscuity and prostitution, and she ranted about how filthy she thought prostitution was, as well as how filthy she thought women were in general. She would even force Jenny to participate in beatings on occasion. And if Jenny did not comply with this, Jenny would get beaten. A boy named Coy Hubbard, as well as several of his classmates, would visit the house to physically and verbally abuse Sylvia. This was often done alongside the Banaszewski children. Sorry, I spelled it weird this time, and so I got confused. Or also, Gertrude herself would sometimes be a part of this. Who am I kidding? She was mostly a part of this. But Gertrude would encourage these neighborhood children to beat Sylvia. They would also sometimes use her as like a practice dummy for judo sessions that got really horrible and violent. Judo's like a fighting. It's a fighting technique. But they would lacerate her body, burn her skin with cigarettes over 100 times. And they would also badly injure her genital area. It seems like injuring this poor girl's genital area is like a common thing at this point. It's concerning. Like, if she had somehow lived through all of this, spoiler alert, she doesn't, then I would assume that her area would be all, excuse my language, fucked up down there. So, like, I don't know if she lived, if she somehow lived through it, if she would be able to have, like, children. I mean, like, to be able to, like, birth them, or, you know. But they would also force her to strip naked and pleasure herself with a glass Pepsi Cola bottle. Now, Pepsi Cola is a very old brand name for, like, Pepsi and Coca-Cola. So, yeah. But they would watch her do this as they were making her do this. They made her do this so they could watch. That's... And Gertrude would say that this was for Sylvia to prove to her sister what type of girl you are, as Gertrude put it. Sylvia was eventually forbidden to even attend school. This was after she confessed to stealing a gym uniform, as Gertrude refused to buy her new clothing for her. So Gertrude whipped the girl for doing this. This was done using a 3-inch wide police belt. I don't know what those look like, but like 3-inch wide is gotta be like a thick boy. So like, ouchie. Even more than ouchie, this girl's got multiple wounds at this point. So she whipped, and then eventually at some point Gertrude moved on to ranting about the evils of premarital sex, which, like, how does point A get to point B in this scenario? How are these two things correlated, Gertrude? Are you mentally unstable, Gertrude? Then she would repeatedly kick Sylvia in the genitals. That's a common thing that Gertrude does to this poor girl. Stephanie, this is... Remember, I mentioned Stephanie possibly not being a bad, like, person in this scenario, because Stephanie did come to Sylvia's defense during this, shouting that she didn't do anything, but Gertrude still proceeded to burn Sylvia's fingertips with a match. Days later, Gertrude would beat Jenny with the same belt for stealing one tennis shoe to wear on her stronger foot. Because remember, Jenny had polio, and that affected her leg really bad, one of her legs really badly, the left one. And throughout all of this, the Likens sisters were afraid to contact their family members or other adults about the situation they were in. And, that's where I stopped for now. I think I chose this case not primarily because I was interested. I found it interesting. I've, like, heard about it through YouTube, TikTok. I'm part of the true crime community. It just, true crime cases interest me for some reason. I want to know why it happens, why murder specifically, why people murder, I guess. That's why I've talked about, like, serial killers like John Wayne Gacy. There's also, what's her name? The girl one. Oh my gosh. She's so notorious. How can I not remember her? It starts with an A. But she killed a bunch of men, claimed that they R-worded her. That's the one word I'm not gonna say on the internet, because that's a very sensitive topic. Very, well, obviously this whole case that we're talking about today is a sensitive topic, and I'm explaining it kind of in some very graphic detail. But the reason why I chose this case is because I've heard a bit about it before, and so I knew going into this research, there would have to be some definite warning labels on this episode in particular because of certain details in this case. But another reason why I kind of picked it is because I believe there's a very special spot in hell for people like that, and I've personally dealt with someone who's not as bad as Gertrude, definitely, thank goodness, because I'm still here. But I've also dealt with, like, abuse from someone very, very close to me in my family. I don't speak to these certain two people anymore, and it doesn't affect me as badly as it used to. But that's my... I just... With cases where people abuse other people, it really makes me hate that type of... that person that is the one that's abusing other people. I just... Especially if it's, like, a parent abusing a child, it's like... I always imagine myself in, like, that type of situation, if I was there, how I would, like, try to save this kid, or something like that, try to get them out of that situation. So anyways, that is all for today. A part two will be up at some point. I don't know when, but I am back again. What I've been doing over this hiatus is I went to college. I'm back. Now, I don't think I'm going back to college for certain reasons, but while I was there, I did do a live radio show. If you're within the area where it broadcasted, you may have heard me. It went by the same name as this podcast, which is Thinking Out Loud, and I talked about people like H.H. Holmes, who, fun fact, is my distant cousin. But I also talked about my other interesting people in my family history, like Mary Perkins Bradbury, a convicted witch who survived the Salem witch trials because of possibly a corrupt Boston jailer who accepted the family's bribes. And you might think, because I said the last name Bradbury, you might be relating that to Ray Bradbury. Well, I'm also related to him too, through her. Mary Perkins Bradbury is my 10th great-grandmother, which makes me somehow related to Ray Bradbury, the author of Fahrenheit 451, which I've read, and pretty interesting book. I'm also related to Ralph Waldo Emerson, another great writer as well. I've read some of his works. I have a whole book of his poems. And I also am related, I can't remember the name of this guy, but it's again through Mary Perkins Bradbury. He was a physician and created a lot of football plays that we still use today. And of course, in that episode, I also included H.H. Holmes because America's first documented serial killer. And I also talked about Holmes specifically the episode after that, and that led into the Jack the Ripper, because there's a theory there that they are the same people, which I kind of believe now, because there's like a gap. Holmes was interesting. He left like a paper trail of transactions, documents, and stuff. There's literally like a gap that fits within when Jack the Ripper was running around England killing people. And apparently in Holmes's own diary, he did say that he was in England for a time. I'm assuming it was during that time, so I kind of believe it. I kind of think that it may be kind of possible. Anyways, I'm on a rant here again. Part 2 of this case will be up at some point. And as always, have a great day, a great life, a great whatever. Stay safe, stay healthy, and I'll see you next time. Bye!